I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Marketing Trends and the Leeds Art Week.
Streaming services and connected televisions now dominate living rooms. But what influence has OTT programming had on brands when it comes to content development, strategy, and advertising?
If you can create content that appeals to the kid, but also the overall family and the parents, that's a win-win, right? Because you're going to get no pushback from the parents when everyone sits down and say, yeah, okay, let's watch the Lego movie because it's fun and it's funny and it's exciting. Generally speaking, brands that want to create content, I think the reality is that some brands have afforded themselves the rights to be entertainment brands, and some are just not there or will never be there.
While sitting down and picking a show has become easier, the ecosystem that on-demand services such as YouTube, Netflix, and Disney Plus offer is changing the game for advertisers looking to capitalize on the influx of inventory. On this episode of Marketing Trends, Charles Gabriel, head of U.S. advertising at WildBrain Spark, explores the intricacies of advertising on OTT services, including where advertisers go wrong in the space. Charles also covers major trends that he sees occurring within the industry, including why linear advertising continues to decrease. Enjoy this episode. This message is brought to you by Salesforce. Hey, marketers. Today's B2B buyers are more complex than ever, and every buying committee has different needs and goals. Salesforce can help. We'll show you how to put each and every customer at the center of your B2B marketing strategy, and you'll learn how top brands like Lyft approach account-based marketing. Salesforce, market to every account, speak to every buyer. Find free B2B marketing and ABM resources at sfdc.co/every-buyer.
Welcome to Marketing Trends. I'm Ian Faison, host of Marketing Trends, and today we are joined by special guest Charles. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you on the show. Excited to be talking about all things WildBrain today and a little bit about your background. So how did you get started in marketing?
How did I get started in marketing? I probably took a different path than most, but I started right away in digital marketing back in 2006, almost entirely focused on the video ecosystem and what was starting to happen, which for me was identifying the trend that TV was going to shift, ad dollars were going to shift, and this was going to create a tremendous amount of opportunity across tech, media, and the advertising landscape overall. So I actually started at one of the early video ad networks that was making an effort to aggregate any inventory being created online through various publisher websites. That company was called Broadband Enterprises, founded by former CBS executive Matt Wasserloff. And then I went on to help build a video ad tech company that was providing player solutions and content management solutions along with content and the monetization systems. And that was pretty early on before publishers had easy access to players and content.
And so now today, flash forward to today, you're head of advertising for the US at WildBrain. Can you share a little bit more about WildBrain for our listeners who don't know?
Sure, yeah. So WildBrain is a publicly traded company in Canada based out of Toronto, formerly known as DHX Media. Been making kids and family shows for 25 years or so, aggregated a few studios through acquisition. The company itself is an IP owner, manages a tremendous amount of IP, does production service work out of our studio in Vancouver, where we have an 800 plus seat high-end animation studio. We are the owners of some very significant and iconic IP, such as The Peanuts, where we are a majority owner and manager of the business. Strawberry Shortcake, Inspector Gadget, Caillou, the Teletubbies, Yo Gabba Gabba, Johnny Test, and a number of other brands and some new brands that we've been developing over the last few years. And then our AVOD division, which is WildBrain Spark, based out of London, has been managing not only our own library of content, but a number of partners like NBC and Turner and Mattel properties on YouTube and have a significant expertise in YouTube channel management operations, how to develop audiences. And then we've recently, as of 2020, rolled out a direct advertising business to start to represent this inventory directly to advertisers. That is a new venture for WildBrain overall, because outside of the Canadian market, primary revenue stream was to license and to sell the programming. So now we are also doing that, but where we have our presence on AVOD platforms, looking to sell the inventory directly.
Yeah, we're gonna talk a lot about AVOD today. Can you share for listeners, like, what is AVOD?
Advertiser video on demand, right? So ad-supported video platforms, YouTube being the biggest, most recognizable AVOD platform in any one single market by a massive mile. But then, you know, you're seeing the other services, most of them originating out of the U.S., emerging over time and getting much stronger. And I think what you've seen happen in the recent years is the major broadcasters have recognized this as a pillar for their businesses, and through acquisition have brought in some of these companies. So Tubi being acquired by Fox, or Pluto being acquired by Viacom. Services that are free and ad supported, and then also that start to then have different tiers where users can have paid options that might limit the advertising or give them different options. Hulu certainly was one of the big early versions of ad supported platforms that emerged as well.
Yeah, and you know, this feels like one of those kind of times where, you know, once YouTube became, you know, a behemoth, and then you had these kind of start popping up. And I think kind of all of us were kind of like, wait and see, like, oh, what's going on? And then you saw the success of, obviously, you know, Hulu, everybody knows that, but whether it's in industry or outside, but like you said, Tubi and some of these channels, which, I mean, got huge overnight with this ad supported piece. I mean, I guess taking a zoom out on the industry overall, it seems like being able to set up these type of channels with amazing content that's ad supported is obviously interesting in and of its own right. But as an advertiser, for the marketers who listen to this podcast, it's an opportunity potentially for some really good advertising in a place where there might not be as much competition because people might not be as hip to it, as they say.
Yeah, I think AVOD in general is going to be critical for advertisers moving forward. Different audiences, the numbers are different, but the general trend is that the linear ratings are continuing to decline. Streaming has risen tremendously, even pre-pandemic, but the pandemic helped accelerate that incredibly. You look at the SVOD services, they're occupying a tremendous amount of people's time. There is no advertising there. There's potentially other opportunities for some brands that have character IP that they might develop into shows, whether that be animated or live action. But for the most part, you're starting to see a potential hole develop for advertisers, especially in the kids and family sector. With the rise of Disney Plus, and you look at, again, Netflix, a tremendous amount of premium kids and family content go to those services. So as the broadcasters then develop their plus, you know, their streaming services, it's going to be important that there is a layer of those services that remain ad-supported. Otherwise, advertisers are really going to have to get much smarter about their content and their approach to advertising in general, because the television side and the linear side is no longer going to be able to support the reach.
And what is SVOD?
Subscription video on demand. So that's your Netflix, your Disney Plus, and any service that you're able to buy into on a monthly basis that will not show advertising.
We're going to get into the family and children piece of this, you know, primarily what you all work on, and is absolutely fascinating as a space. Not something that we've talked a bunch about on the show. So we're so excited for that. But so as you kind of mentioned, there is things like, obviously, with Disney Plus, massive investment in Disney Plus. It was the logical extension. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not saying the world has been waiting for this, but in some ways, we were waiting for Disney to be able to put all of their stuff under one roof for a long time so that we didn't, you know, have to. I mean, remember, you used to have to be like, Aladdin would be on sale for a DVD for like 3 months or something like that. And then it was like, oh, nope, you can't buy it again for like 4 years or whatever. I don't even remember it, but it seems so crazy. So as you mentioned, tons of children's programming there. or programming in general, and tons of programming on things like, you know, Apple TV or other spots that advertisers can't get to, despite the fact that we would all love to advertise on, you know, season two of Ted Lasso, right? We would all love to be there, but we can't. And there's this massive opportunity in AVOD, and it seems like it would be a full-time job just to navigate those AVOD options to try to figure out where people should be spending their money.
One of the challenges for most advertisers as AVOD continues to grow and the different platforms and services emerge is the fact that you're seeing a creation of more walled gardens. They want to have their own systems, their own view of the advertising, you know, their own strategies on how they're going to place that advertising. Some of them will conform and potentially be bought out of, you know, unified systems like the Trade Desk, where advertisers can go in and buy inventory. But I think one of the challenges that's going to continue to occur is frequency control across the various platforms that they're buying advertising on. And, you know, where you might want to do a direct buy with a specific network or a specific show that has their assets across a few different services, and those same brands have overarching investment deals with the platform itself, that's where you're going to see, I think, a little bit of control conflict and frequency control.
So let's talk Wild Brain specific and this children's ecosystem. So this is something where, you know, obviously you all have some like absolute premium properties like Peanuts and all the things that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. but you also are with Wild Brain Spark in a different piece of this kind of ecosystem. What is the state of kind of children's programming and advertising?
Well, from a digital perspective, and I think really you got to think about this in categories in some way. Toy manufacturers, toy companies, the Mattels, the Hasbros, the Legos, I mean, they are inextricably linked to content. Then there's just no way around that. I think that you know, the past where you create a TV show, it's related to a toy product that then that's going to be for sale in retail. That has only become a more important part of the process. And if you're again a Mattel or a Hasbro, you need to push into becoming a media company. You need to try to control your own destiny there. And you're seeing that happen, right? You're seeing Mattel announce, you know, multiple live action films based on toy products and game properties that they have. And so what we found is, given the fact that YouTube is so large and so just bigger than every other service by leaps and bounds in every market, it also happens to be the number one place for kids to watch content, partly because I think it gives them the searchability and access to both long form broadcast quality content and episodes from libraries that are being put there, as well as short form and influencer based content that they're seeking also. So it kind of gives them the best of all worlds. They've obviously improved product over time, the CTV connections, whether that's through your TV or through your cable box, wherever you're accessing, it's just continuing to grow on the connected TV screen. So if you're an advertiser, and you are looking to reach kids, or you're looking to reach mom and dad with a product that they're going to purchase for kids, number one, I just don't see any way around it. You have to be advertising on YouTube. Number two, you have to have a really smart content strategy, whether you're creating show-based content, whether you're creating shorts, whether you're creating, you know, toy play or integrations with other brands. YouTube has to be core to your strategy. YouTube Kids app, a little bit of a separate subject, I think. So I'm still talking about YouTube main. I think YouTube Kids also presents an opportunity for some of those same advertisers, just a little bit more controlled environment as it needs to be. And so some more restrictions that they need to pay attention to.
Yeah. So where you're sitting as head of advertising, What are you hearing from advertisers on a day-to-day basis on this stuff? Like, do they feel like they have a good understanding of YouTube? Are they still trying to figure this out? Like, you know, what are you hearing?
I mean, there's two aspects here, right? You have the agency community that's executing a lot of the buys on behalf of brands. And I think that, you know, they have to get educated very quickly, but also part of their challenge is turning back to a client and saying, you know, here's why you need to be here. Yes, we understand there could be safety control issues and things that you might not like, but the reality is you have to move where the audience is. So, you know, from that aspect, I think the agency community has worked pretty hard to get educated and to understand the changes that occurred on YouTube following the Made for Kids policies. And that went into effect in January of 2020. And it was a significant change because one of the primary strategies on YouTube in order to have some automation and self-control from an advertising perspective is to buy through auction. And with the Made for Kids changes, that definitively changed what you could do through auction. You could no longer access interest-based data and really be able to target and identify the kids' programming if that's what you were seeking in the first place. What ultimately that did is it sort of removed some revenues from the system, because if you were a retailer or you were a CPG advertiser, maybe part of your strategy was to advertise against some of that content. I think more than likely, because account holder data tends to be the parents, that they were targeting the age and gender data of the parents, and potentially not, they didn't even know that they were running on kids programming. So that's caused a little bit of a hole in the kids monetization, and working really hard with brands to identify the fact that kids do have a significant influence in the household when it comes to purchase. Anybody who has a kid who's 6 to 12 years old knows this, no matter what you're buying. And so bringing a lot of these category-based advertisers back into the fold to support some of that kids' programming is super important. And that's something we're talking to brands and agencies about. The other impact there, if you look at what happened during 2020, is the diversity impact and sort of the storytelling that brands want to be around, but more importantly, the importance of kids when it comes to really affecting change in the world. If you want to affect change, you need to start showing kids what you want the world to be. That needs to be supported by brands. You know, the cost of production for quality content in order to be able to deliver this kind of storytelling that's going to create the change and impact that we all want can't be done on its own. It's going to be done with the support of advertisers.
A lot of great stuff in there. I'm curious, you know, the advertisers, how much sway do they have in the creation of that type of content?
I think there's three plays. I mean, first off, advertisers can, you know, fund and create their own content, which giving themselves ownership over the assets. And they do that often. Distribution is usually the piece that they need to purchase and or work with partners and publishers and platforms to make sure that they have the right distribution promotion of that content. The other way that they play there is by doing custom integration work and getting their brands inserted into content, both through brand placement, but also storyline and thematics and other types of integrations that are going to show as really quality content versus what you've seen a lot in the last probably 6 years or so, which is a flood of what I would call pretty poor branded content that ultimately turns out to be a 6-minute ad, and nobody wants that, right?
I mean, we've talked about on the show, we've had Lego on, and we've talked about the Lego movie in a lot of ways is probably the greatest piece of like, you know, content, you know, one of the greatest pieces of marketing content ever made. Their sales skyrocketed because of that. Yep. It's very popular, and it allowed all sorts of, you know, additional franchise kind of opportunities. Not everybody can do that, but I mean, there's a lot of opportunity here for people to be able to create that stuff. Where do you sit on all of that? What are you hoping for, pushing for? What do you think is important there?
You know, first of all, the Lego example is probably the one that most marketers are striving towards when they think about, you know, creating a piece of content that becomes a franchise that appeals to so many. What I would add to that part before answering the question is simply, you know, if you can create content that appeals to the kid, but also the overall family and the parents, I mean, that's a win-win, right? Because you're going to get no pushback from the parents when everyone sits down and say, yeah, okay, let's watch the Lego movie because it's fun and it's funny and it's exciting. Generally speaking, brands that want to create content, You know, I think the reality is that some brands have afforded themselves the rights to be entertainment brands, and some are just not there or will never be there. And that's why they need to rely on, you know, scaled advertising opportunities and content as a vehicle to deliver their message versus having the ability to really go into, you know, create new IP and have a film or a show. With that said, I think we're at a moment in time where brands can start to think about, you know, do I create new IP? Do I have a spokesperson character that could become a standalone entertainment property? And that's something I think brands should think through. I think there's a number of brands out there that could actually do that. You know, I think you've in the past, I've heard the General Mills of the worlds and other cereal manufacturers have gone to Hollywood and, you know, start shipping or shopping their characters to see about making films. So I think you're going to see a little bit more of that. And again, you're going to see it on both ends. I think you're going to see it in the animation world. And then I think you're also going to see that transition to live action from anyone who has animated characters.
Were you going to get a live action, the leprechaun from Lucky Charms here, or a cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs?
I mean, you never know. I mean, Mattel's doing a live action Polly Pocket, and that's a franchise that's been around for a really long time. So you never know. I mean, I've had the discussions about all sorts of characters that could be very interesting to be standalone IP. And then in the world of licensing, being able to take that and have a totally new revenue stream around products that could be created around those characters. And so, you know, the world of advertising and the world of media and the world of IP and licensing really is coming closer and closer together.
Well, it's, you know, it's so funny, right? It's like you poke fun at that, right? But it's like, it's kids programming, right? It's like they dig the leprechaun on, like when I was a kid, I ate Lucky Charms and I stared at the box for 20 minutes while I was eating it. So it's not like it's like a bridge too far. It's not like we, you know, it's going to be running on HBO Max or something like that. You know, like it's not going to be something that, you know, probably adults are tuning into, but I don't know if it needs to be.
It might not. I think that if you consider yourself a family brand and your products and services are, you know, everyday household items, probably harder to cross that bridge. But if you're a brand that has an entertainment service or an apparel product, a toy product, a gaming product, you know, you probably have more room to play tech as well. And I just think it's just an interesting moment in time for brands to start to explore that. How do they have assets? That's something that's, you know, probably really important to brands is how do I create more assets? How do I do that effectively and efficiently? But then also out of that, how do I have, you know, IP and potentially new revenue streams that come out of my marketing initiatives?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing with Lego, right? Is that their marketing initiative made money. Like that's the real, you know, it's not just, it was a massive investment. I forget how much I think it was like, it was a lot for them to make that. I think it was like 150 million. I think they made like 450 million or something like that. I mean, you're talking about like massive numbers.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the numbers behind the film, but I mean, again, like just look at the impact that's had for Lego overall. And what's super interesting about what they did, and this is the mistake that I think most advertisers make when they start going into content, they were able to find a way in that movie to show the use of the product without making it look like they're showing people how to use the product. Right.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think it was done in a really, really, really smart way. Side note, we're currently the producer of their Ninjago series.
Oh, crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we do that series for Lego currently.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is the classic marketing show don't tell, right? And they crushed it with great character development and a great story and all that stuff. But, you know, we've been lauding Pixar for 20 years about how they make four quadrant films. Obviously, Disney forever making four quadrant films. Every single parent is excited when a new Pixar movie comes out because they know that this movie, that they're going to like it and that their kid is going to like it. I mean, and no surprise, there's not a lot of Pixars, right? Like we always say, if it was that easy, everybody would be able to do it. But I think it speaks to content is really hard, right? And it, like you said, it's not for everyone. It's not for every product. Everyone doesn't need to be doing, you know, IP. And if you look at, you know, you published something in Adweek where you wrote that WildBrain Sparks, you have 4 billion monthly views on YouTube and saw a 55% increase on connected TV. I mean, it seems like behavior is shifting, not just content.
Yeah, for sure. I think part of that growth on the big screen in the living room, right, is probably two or three reasons. One is I think people are then seeking out and wanting to watch together more often. And we found that in our past research, as well as our recent research that we just published and did in conjunction with Ipsos, you know, 80+% of parents are watching together with their families and kids on a weekly basis. And about 44% of them doing that on a daily basis. So people want to get together more. I think we went through a period of time and mobile will always be hugely important in the media and advertising ecosystem and to consumers, but that also separated audiences, right? And I think if you're a parent and you have a kid, you probably went through a period of time, depending on the age of your kid, where it's like, okay, go take the phone and go watch something. But then the reality is they have access to so much, even with parental controls, that you don't really know exactly what they may be doing or what they may be consuming, unless you're the helicopter parent, which they exist for sure. And you know, by bringing things back to the big screen and streaming together and watching together, you have a little bit more curation over what the kids are watching. And that I think is a helpful tool for parents. It also brings time together. And I think that was a really meaningful result out of the pandemic when it came to watching behaviors. In addition to that, I think that technology products, you know, the connected TVs, the smart TVs, they've all gotten better. Your integrations with different apps have all gotten better. You know, even your, you know, cable boxes that have gotten, you know, smaller over time and the UI is better in the menu and you can access the apps easier. And then how you connect to the services. I think all that's improved so much that it's made it a lot easier for people to get back to the living room.
I totally agree with you. And it's just funny how technology follows those things. You know, it's funny. We talk about podcasts a lot about how podcasts, not like it had a resurgence because it never went anywhere, but things like AirPods and stuff like that hugely increased podcast usage because it's just way easier, right? Apple fixing their app and making it better and other, you know, podcast apps that are out there making that sort of stuff better. And, you know, like you said, with the technology piece on this, I mean, my family, when we got our first, you know, Amazon Fire Stick, it was just like, oh my gosh, this is freaking great. This tiny little remote, it's got a couple controls and everything we do is now app-based. And, you know, you go on and on from there. I remember with my nephew, it was just like he had his iPad and everything was, you know, cruising through that. And then now, you know, it is different. I think it tracks that, you know, you're saying 80% of people are watching at least once a week, you know, essentially with their kids. Obviously, like you said, mobile and the iPad or the phone or whatever is always going to be there. And, you know, kid has headphones on, sitting on the couch or whatever. That's great, especially for certain programs that parents might pull their hair out listening to over and over again, you know, the 55th time you watch Moana. But, you know, like you said, if it's an opportunity where it is great programming, where you can watch it with your kid, where it's maybe it's, you know, some of these shows that we watched as kids and now you're watching with them, it feels different in the technology caught up.
100%. You've said a few things that have triggered some thoughts. So first off, the improvement in audio controls, I think, is a big factor. The fact that your child can pick up the remote and press a button and say what they want and have that, you know, show or content item or app on a connected TV makes the use case for getting into the living room and getting the kid on the TV and getting them away from the personal device a lot easier because they can do it themselves. You know, the other thing that I want to just touch on is the nostalgia factor. We've all seen it a lot over the last 18 months plus, but the 80s and 90s nostalgia factor in everything, in entertainment, in apparel, in activities, in everything. It's so interesting to see how all that cycles back. I mean, you know, shows like Cobra Kai, you know, coming back and playing off.
I mean, that show is so good. It's really good.
It was, you know, again, for the audience that grew up with it, it was so fun. And it seems to have adopted a new audience and picked up a new audience, which is great. But the nostalgia factor is really interesting for parents that are probably in their, you know, 40s that have kids, you know, someplace between 6 and 14, 6 and 16. Because they want to be able to share what they loved. And you find that a lot of kids really enjoy that as well. But also the nostalgia factor gives that trust factor in content and brands that parents, you know, trust to show their kids or to enjoy with their kids. So nostalgia is an interesting play overall in entertainment. It's a trend that I personally love and you know, hope to continue to see that. Also partly because from our perspective, we have iconic brands that are trusted, that have that nostalgia factor. And so part of what we do when we look at our data from a viewership perspective, whether it's YouTube or any of the AVOD platforms or the SVOD platforms, is to try to sort out when is the best time to refresh those brands and to bring a new version of that to market. And so that is something that we're doing. Matter of fact, in September, we launched the new Strawberry Shortcake, who, you know, goes from the Berry Patch to the Big City and has a diverse new set of characters and touches on a lot more themes that also has a nostalgia factor in there. It's got some really culturally relevant, funny stuff for parents, but moms that are of that demographic that grew up with this IP and with Strawberry now get to revisit it, get to share it with their daughters, and it becomes a really interesting time to bring some of that stuff back.
It's funny too. I mean, we see this with TV shows that get canceled, that get brought back on a different network. You see all these sort of things where, you know, decisions were made by executives for whatever reason, for whatever purpose back in the day, and then they all of a sudden get brought back. And it's like, wait, this thing was way more popular than people thought, or people find it later on, and then it gets brought back for other seasons. Like, the audience has a vote now. And that's a great place to be as a content creator, especially as someone who owns IP, but also like a reimagining. And I think you all are working on Carmen Sandiego and stuff like that. It's just, it's cool to see kind of reimagining and different ideas.
Yeah, I think there's both the process to refresh and reimagine. And then there's, you know, sort of what you just referenced, which is, you know, library content that gets recirculated and popular again. And that's also really important when you're a content business and you've spent, in most cases, most studios, you know, billions of dollars in production, right, over time. One of the things that I found interesting over the pandemic, as productions were shut down and you weren't seeing new content, you know, every Friday night you go to see what you're going to watch your kids or even yourself, and you're like, damn, there's nothing new, right? So you look at the top 10 on Netflix and, you know, you still see this right now. You're seeing a recirculation of films that were from the 80s, from the 90s. Maybe they're 7 years old, 8 years old, shows, the same thing. And they all of a sudden, they become popular again because people have either A, found more time in this whole hybrid work from home, whatever their scenario is. B, they're trying to spend more time with their families. So they're seeking out all sorts of different types of content. And that recirculation, I think, is it's, to me, it's super interesting to see some of those shows and movies pop again.
Any things, you know, over the past, you know, year or so, particularly stood out to you in terms of trends? You know, as I mentioned, you all are doing 4 billion monthly views, which is just astronomical number wise. And so I'd imagine that you're privy to a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, without having to restate, ultimately that the major trend is towards, you know, show-based, longer form programming that is playing well on the connected TV screen. And then again, you know, the connecting of audiences. So how do you create content that's going to connect an audience that grew up with something with a new audience? You know, you've seen this numerous times in film where they try to reimagine or develop a franchise for a new audience. And oftentimes it fails because they make it so new that it has little connection to.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Previous.
And quite frankly, for me personally, that example would be how they tried to relaunch the franchise of Rocky and bring that to an entirely new audience, which is an MGM property. You know, for me and for folks that I know, like if the first one that they came out with fell kind of flat. And part of that was you still didn't carry over the previous audience that loved Rocky. You just sort of went all out on a new storyline. So that's just my personal example for me, but I you see that in a lot of properties. And I just think bringing along the audience that has known that property for a long time is still really important.
I'll use another one where, for me, and I think the movies are kind of fun and silly, but the Jumanji franchise, you know, getting kind of relaunched with this, like, kind of like virtually no connection to the previous thing, other than that there's this world and this kind of world building element. And like, luckily they did a good job and they have, you know, celebrities, you know, A-list celebrities that are involved, and having The Rock in anything is going to be great. So I think they managed to do it okay. But like, that could have been a massive flop because like Jumanji was a self-contained story. To make it into a franchise, you know, they clearly had to create new characters and do that sort of stuff. But it's like, as a story, it's like, they had to create a completely different story, you know, that has no connection to the past, essentially, other than just this game.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job making it culturally relevant, right? Taking it from the board game of old and the storyline there to, okay, well, it's a video game, because guess what? You know, that's what kids like to play. The way that they showed it in the game was, you know, sort of the archaic video game style. But that was probably the single major connection that they made to make it culturally relevant to the new audience. And then the rest of it was driven by humor, driven by, you know, production value. And then the storyline in general of getting through the game in order to get out. I think it's going to be a big franchise. I mean, the last two movies have been really good. I wouldn't be surprised if they have 2, 3, 4 more coming. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Because it's just like, oh, we created this world. And like the other piece of this is like Jumanji, just the world inside can be anything. And then the world can come outside and back to our world at any time. And like that play is a really creative thing. But again, they did it in a really interesting kind of masterful way. But I just, before we get to our kind of lightning round here, any other things that advertisers should be looking at over the coming years as it comes to like investing in AVOD?
First of all, the fact that with all the new services that have emerged, it gives consumers a lot more choice, which is super important. And I think that advertisers need to make sure that they support that, because once bundles unwind and the paid services that were free for a consumer or the prices go up, your mass consumers aren't going to be able to afford every single SVOD service. So continuing to pay attention to investment in the AVOD services, I think are super important. Yes, for advertisers, but really for consumer choice. I think it's really important. Probably, you know, I think advertisers are looking at sticking to networks and brands and content on these services that they know well and that they trust. I think that's also pretty important as they test the waters or move more dollars into those environments. You know, the connected TV app world is still a little bit wild, wild west. There's still, you know, ad fraud and issues there that are consistently being uncovered, which I think is more the reason why sticking to brands and networks and shows that they know well is probably pretty important. And then, you know, I think at some point for advertisers, and this has been like the long journey as digital has continued to grow, what made TV easy to buy was having a singular currency. I think that is still a pretty big challenge as you see more digital platforms and more digital services, just because it's apples and oranges. Not every metric is the same. The currency overall and how you measure and report, it's all a little bit different depending on the platform. So those become challenges, but I don't think those are challenges that should keep advertisers out of the game. I mean, I commend certain brands for jumping in quickly, because I think that's a good way to test and learn. You also get advantageous pricing usually when you're ahead of the curve. You know, we saw within the YouTube ecosystem, VRBO was an advertiser that stepped up and, you know, spent probably quite a lot of budget and did promote creative on kids programming, which we saw, which was often ad storytelling about, you know, dad and daughter wanting to do something and getting out to the lake, et cetera. I mean, we've probably seen that spot.
We talked about it on the podcast. We talked about VRBO invest because we were like, what an opportunity for VRBO, which is, you know, we talked about how basically Airbnb cut their marketing. Franceschi's been vocal about that they cut marketing during the pandemic, and VRBO comes out with this just like massive, massive marketing campaign targeting video, and is really well done.
Yeah, at a time when travel was, you know, just completely challenged, and they pushed into the get out and get on the road and, you know, get the family to sit together. They pushed that button, and I think it was really, really smart for them. But so yeah, in terms of trends, I just think you're going to continue to see, you know, ratings on the linear side, and I know for sure in the kids space, but I think you're seeing it, you know, across the board. It's going to continue to decline. It's clearly why all the major broadcasters have finally come out with their own services. I think the most interesting thing in that world is I don't think they're all going to survive. You know, none of these are small investments when it comes to technology and content and distribution. So I'd be very curious to see what happens there as each service continues to push into the market, because at some point you just have so many, right? And I think if we looked at our research, we think when you combine SVOD and AVOD services, it's Netflix, YouTube, and Disney. I mean, they're the biggest by a significant margin.
Let's get into our lightning round. These questions are fast and easy, just like marketing with Salesforce. You can go to salesforce.com/marketing to learn more about marketing on the world's number one CRM. That is Salesforce. Put your customers at the center of every interaction. Go to salesforce.com/marketing to learn more. Lightning round questions. Are you ready?
I guess. Let's do it.
Number one, if you weren't in marketing or business at all, what do you think you'd be doing?
Coaching soccer.
Do you have a favorite TV show, podcast, book that you've been checking out recently?
Book, Team of Teams by General Stanley McChrystal. Just wrapped that one up. Fantastic. Shows and podcasts. I mean, I probably have so many. It's hard to choose. I will say the most exciting show for me and my family has been Stranger Things. And we can't wait for season 4. So, you know, really looking forward to that.
Thoughts on U.S. Men's National Team? For the soccer team?
Well, I think that the expectations are super high. I think that they finally figured out how to grow the young talents, often getting them overseas to play. So I think it's the first time I can remember ever that we have so many players playing at a very high level in international clubs. Best is a starter on Barcelona. You have McKennie starting on Juventus. You have Christian Pulisic starting on Chelsea. So that stuff's exciting. I think they have to make a Gold Cup final. I think like anything less is pretty weak. And obviously they have to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah. I cannot stop watching all of our young guys out there. It's freaking amazing. It's so great.
It's getting exciting. It is. And everyone else listening who is not a soccer fan and or comes out of a European country is probably, you know, still chuckling a little bit because we're, you know, number 20 on the FIFA list, but bound to happen. We're going to break through at some point.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, it's fun to be an underdog. And like having Pulisic is just like people, you know, be like, oh, you know, Americans and Pulisic. It's like, it's the most fun thing ever. It's like to have a superstar, yeah, you know, attacking forward, who's like one of the best dribblers in the Premier League, is freaking awesome. It is so fun.
It is. Yeah. And scored in the Champions League semifinal and won the Champions League. So again, for people that don't understand the sport, it was a very exciting milestone, even just from an individual perspective, but to have a US player be there.
Incredible. Last question here. What is your best advice for a first-time VP of advertising?
My best advice is probably to practice servant leadership, you know, lead through serving others, you know, be there to be helpful, be open, honest, and transparent across the board with your employees, with your partners, with your clients, and always ask what you can do to help. Because I find that through that process, you'll develop stronger relationships and really create value in what you're doing.
Charles, we appreciate it. Any final other things to plug or any other thoughts?
The only other thing I'll plug is, you know, we are in the process of bringing our data and insights product known as Darwin, which is our audience insights platform, to market. It's very much in beta at the moment. And we are working really hard to get an external facing product that's going to really help advertisers understand certainly the kids audiences across multiple platforms, but starting with YouTube and YouTube Kids, and then Roblox and AVOD services. And part of what we've done there, and the way I describe it to many people is it's the Netflix recommendation engine meets IBM Watson. It's machine learning, understanding behaviors, understanding patterns, privacy centric, completely compliant data sources, and just finding the right signals that are going to give the right insights to advertisers, to content owners. I think it's going to be a really powerful tool, and we already have a lot of brands that are benefiting from us leveraging our insights and our data.
I love it. That's awesome. We'll have to have you back to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna have a soft rollout, I think, come September, October, and I would love to revisit that and talk to you about it some more.
Charles, appreciate it. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.